Horses with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
Easter and a big weekend ahead. It's Keeneland opening day, and that means 36 degree weather. Just kidding. Although apparently I say this often. There's people say, when should I go to Keeneland? Should I go in the spring or should I go in the fall? The fall. The fall. Because, boy, the cold windy conditions in the spring can be pretty rough. It'll be gorgeous at some point, but I can tell from the early morning missives in and around Lexington, everybody's looking forward to going, but they also are going to insulate themselves. Yeah, it's fine if you're indoors, you know, if you're in the gold room, not to worry, right? But it gets chilly, Keeneland in like a lion, out like a lamb. Maybe we didn't get to do that this year. We somehow whiffed, or did we get it in? I can't remember now. I think maybe you did sneak it in on me late in the show. March, was it March? Did we have March 1st? Were we on the air? March? It was a Monday. Yeah. It should be a lot of fun. And the card today, I ended up sitting down to write it up this morning. So I'll have my thoughts for races 5 through 10. And, you know, one thing that I didn't really notice until after the sale on Wednesday, but I just put I put a little tweet up, that sixth race today from a pedigree note, and it's just a coincidence that racing does this to you all the time. In the sixth race, Watts Humphrey and Rusty Arnold are sending out Magic Quest. And she's got her work cut out a little bit out in the 12 hole and a little tough for a debut. This happens to be a filly, being out of Magical Ride. And by Nyquist, she's 3/4 to the sale topper from Wednesday because Spinning World is Magical Ride's sister. And also the colt, of course, that sold for $2.6 million by Nyquist. So the closely related three-year-old sister-ish, niece. I guess he would be the nephew, so she would be something of an aunt. But very closely related and bred along the same lines. And, of course, we had that wonderful Watts Humphrey. I'll find that. We'll get that link, because if you've never heard Watts Humphrey opine on breeding, and so I put the title up, Sell the Colts, Keep the Fillies, because that's the philosophy when you breed to both race and sell. So here's the perfect example. Now, when he sold the yearling was $160,000 and then became a two-year-old, $2.6 million. But that whole female family that Watts Humphrey draws from is a font of, top horse flesh. So keep that one in mind today. There's that. This is the race that Marty talked about with the Munnings filly for Todd Beatty coming in from Penn. Stand by you. And Stephen Lister has got Shoshani Moon the Griffin homebred, Malibu Moon, who ran very well at Oaklawn in the debut and is probably the horse to beat. But there's a couple of other firsters that are worth noting. Sukata, Mike Maker, I thought, the frosted filly, is okay in here. And you've got one of those scenarios of a horse that debuted at two and then has been away for over 6 months. Distorted Verve. Yeah, Mr. Fipke in Dallas. And you know, kind of an even debut in September at Churchill. And now comes back as a three-year-old. Distorted Humor filly. And she's 15-1. And I'm using her, too. This is a fun race. These are always notable. And there's one going. This is 6.5. There's one going long. The mile and a 16th, Nightcap. So a great way to start at Keeneland. And you got the two-year-olds that gets juvenile racing booted off and started in 2021. Awfully nice way to wade into the first Saturday in April. And, of course, Santa Anita Derby, Bluegrass and Wood tomorrow, and everything that goes with it. We're going to get as much coverage in as 3 hours will allow. And it'll allow a visit in just a few minutes from Dave Grenning. Get Dave to kick things off. So we'll start in New York and get Dave's thoughts. As, of course, yesterday, the spring meet, as it were, just, you know, a handful of dates at Aqueduct before a scene shifts to Belmont. But, you know, it is a separate springish meet. So we'll get going there. And, of course, turf racing resumes or starts, depending on your viewpoint, today. In New York, it's cold, it's coldish. I think weather-wise, we're okay. I haven't looked downstate, but I think we got what we got. And in terms of precipitation, and you know, it tried to snow. It was not successful, at least in the Capital District. So we'll talk to Dave and kick things off there. James Scully, of course, we'll get Scully in, and we'll get his plays. Into the weekend, see what he likes, and we'll get his read in his Kentucky Derby report as well. We'll see what he thought of last weekend. Jay Privman, top of hour two, Derby Watch, and I hope you partook of Derby Watch Live. Jay and Marty yesterday, the Q&A, and they've been doing these at DRF the last few weeks. Last week it was Mike Welch, and yesterday Jay and Marty. So we'll get Jay in here, and he'll survey the landscape on the Derby Watch front. We'll check in with Hammer, and you got two stakes at Oaklawn ahead of next week's big. It's still the Arkansas Festival of Racing. We can still call it that, certainly, and we'll see what Hammer's got. You do have, you know, it's funny, you've got the fantasy, which everybody is focused on, but when I went and printed out PPs and looked at the races, The Purple Martin, it's a small field. It's a group of five. Three-year-old fillies going six. It is a really interesting race. They're separated. The five fillies are separated by just a couple of lengths. A very interesting group. You got two Asmussens, Larry Jones, Brad Cox, and John Ortiz. And, you know, Abrogate certainly... you know, feels like the key pin. Windmill is actually the 9-5 favorite, but I thought Abrogate, you know, was just as likely if you're looking at it that way. But the other three are all within range, and it's a bit of a chess match. So that Purple Martin, just for, you know, I don't know how great of a betting opportunity it's going to be, but take a look. And then, of course, the fantasy. And the fantasy is the anchor leg. I'll remind you, the anchor leg of the cross-country pick five goes off at 6:54 Eastern time. And the whole sequence starts at 4:57 Eastern time with the Shakertown. The Shakertown, then the Gazelle, the Wood, the Madison, and the fantasy is the cross-country pick five. And we'll talk to Nick later top of hour three. In between Nick and Hammer, Ed DeRosa. And I think there might be room for one surprise visit somewhere in there in hour three. Papo will visit at the end of the show, and we'll get a couple of form to win plays for the weekend. And speaking of plays yesterday, Rich Eng tried those two horses that Rich liked ran second and third. Just not as productive as last week, but that bean counter took a bunch of money and ended. I can't remember what now which was second and which was third, but Northern and bean counter, but a couple of board hits for Rich yesterday. Want to slip this in because Friday, meaning today at 5 o'clock, is the cutoff for registration for the Wood Betting Challenge. Wood Challenge tomorrow, $3,000 buy-in, $2,000 bankroll, $1,000 prize pool, and prizes, I think, first through seventh, I think it was, and there's two NHC seats available. So lots of with all the handicapping you're doing, lots of opportunity on the contest front. Santa Anita, too, as well. All right, so the Wood Challenge, though, 5 o'clock cutoff to register. So make the move. I retweeted the link yesterday afternoon. And I wanted to slip that in. Otherwise, it'll slip through the cracks. If I know how these afternoons, these mornings turn into the afternoon. All right. We can do case reach for Dave Grenig and we'll get started. No reason to wait. No particular hard news that is pressing per se, and anything that we do have, we can slip in as the morning progresses. I did have a couple of exchanges with Marty and with Ron Anderson. Thanks to Ron, too. The stake today, the Palisades, the Palisade Turf Sprint, because I brought it up with Marty yesterday, chasing Artie. He's cross-entered into tomorrow, into a starter allowance. So he's... unless there were some arrangements made, he has to scratch out of that Palisade. And, of course, Wesley Ward still well-represented with the 2-1 favorite, Fauci. So just a note there. And Marty said that he would have he expected to have scratches very, very early today. And also I will slip in because it also may not get discussed, but the draws for Sunday, and of course a very limited calendar on Sunday, as you would expect. Easter not the same as Christmas when it comes to the racetrack. You know, Christmas everybody shuts down. Easter almost everybody, certainly New York there won't be, but the Las Flores on Sunday will go as the second race, 4:30 Eastern. Gamin makes her return, and she scared away pretty much anybody from the entry box. Baffert also added Kahira and Ian Cruel Jack, Hang a Star, and Biddy Duke for Doug O'Neill and Joe Bessiker. But that's it for Horse Field. Gamin and three willing participants. Dave Grenig joins us now from New York. Dave, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Happy Good Friday to you.
Yeah, well, I look forward, you know, most of my mornings I say to everybody, you know, good Thursday, good Tuesday, good Wednesday. It's only once a year that I can literally say Good Friday.
You're like the broken clock, that's right, twice a day, but now you just write it once a year.
Exactly right. That's very true. Well, Dave, you know, here it is. It's your second. This might actually be your third winter spring visit. So it's been a banner aqueduct for you here.
Yeah, it's been great. My agent's done a good job.
that would mean keeping you off. You mean, or keeping me from calling you? Looking at what we got tomorrow, there's a serious crunch for horses for, you know, at the top level, it seems. I mean, to look at these three cards, Keeneland, Santa Anita, and Aqueduct, and there's five and six horse stake fields that dot the landscape.
Insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. And racing is nothing if not insane. And we run the tracks just, you know, like clockwork, the same stakes races for the same horses, the same day, the same time. And we just keep doing it over and over and over again. And that's, you know, with less and less horses, and this is what you come up with. And it's going to continue. Yeah. And when you have less good horses, and when most of the people have the good horses, you're going to have fewer and fewer solid races, because there's too many races and too few horses and too few trainers have too few horses. I mean, it's nothing new, no revelation.
Yeah, it felt more acute, looking at a selection of races across the country like this, this weekend. And we'll touch on a couple of them, right here, right now, as we wade into tomorrow too. Should note the return to turf.
Yeah, actually today, we have two turf races today that they will stay on. We did get some rain yesterday, but it ended early enough. The wind picked up. Look, we have 10 days left here at Aqueduct. They'll get as much use of the turf as they can. It won't be a lot because, just numbers. I mean, two today, two tomorrow. We don't race Sunday, so then we'll come back with, 9 days after? Eight days, 2 weeks. 4 day maybe, in weather permitting. And so you'll have around 20-some-odd turf races. I always kind of think, I am one who thinks we should stay here a little bit longer for the spring meet, at least until after the Derby. But, I don't make those decisions, and that's why we leave on April 18th.
Well, and it is a week early. I mean, at the very least, it's a week shorter than usual. And, with the luxury of those – of the two turf courses, you would think that that's one thing I didn't get a chance to. I did have Martin earlier in the winter, and we were too far away from it, and I hadn't really come up. But certainly a topic. I don't know what the
thinking
rush was.
The thinking is this: Saratoga handles. At this level, and obviously you can't see me, but it's high. It's near my, near the roof of my car. And then Belmont handles at the steering wheel of my car, and Aqueduct handles at the, the gear shift on my car. So they think the longer, if we go to Belmont, the Belmont brand is X percent higher than the Aqueduct brand, and Saratoga brand is Y percent better than the Belmont brand. And that's why last year when, there was angst from some people about why are we going up to Saratoga when there's no fans. And yet, the Saratoga brand did come through, and it showed they almost handled as much as they did the year before without a person on the racetrack. So I can't argue with them. My only counter to them would be, look, no matter where you are in the last week of April, first week of May, you're going up against either Keeneland and or Derby week. So does it really matter for those specific 2 weeks where you are? And I guess the argument is, yes, it does. So they've got people who get lots of money to make these decisions, business decisions, and I'm not one of them.
Well, let's try to make some decisions about how the racing unfolds. And we look, I guess we should actually touch on quickly, because I haven't mentioned it. We've got the distaff today, right?
Yeah, the distaff for Phillies and Mares sprinting. A lot of horses coming off layoffs and probably using this as preps for races down the road. Lake Avenue would have been a strong favorite in here, but she got a foot bruise. So Bill Mott, as his winter is pretty solid, has a very suitable replacement in Grade 1 winner Paris Lights. Has not been seen since the coaching club American Oaks. She probably prefers two turns. She's probably good enough to beat these going one.
Well, and nice. There's actually a nice sequence today. It's an 8-race card. There's a very nice, you know, that turf allowance has got a nice group, first level, 3 and ups going 8.5, and there's also a second level allowance sprinting that starts the late pick 4. So it's actually a kind of a bettable sequence. Let's talk about Saturday, and the earliest stake is the Bayshore, the 3-year-olds, and the presence of Drain the Clock in here at 1-2 feels pretty imposing.
Well, I think this is why it's race 4. He's 1-2 on the morning line and looks every bit of it to me on paper. He's a 4-for-4 around one turn. He's never really run a bad race. You don't count the John Lafitte when the boot ripped on the jockey and he fell off the horse. So that's a throw out. He ran a respectable second in the Fountain of Youth because you have to sort of give him the obligatory effort to go or try to go around two turns. He didn't disgrace himself, but he probably proved that if he's going to be a force in some major races earlier in the year, that one turn would be his best. I think the Woody Stevens being a grade one at Belmont in June is actually a good thing for some of these races that you don't get horses that, you know, once you try it once, you say, well, we tried it. Now we can go to, you know, let's set our sights on the Woody Stevens. It's a grade one in June, where normally you'd have to wait till like the Alan Jerkins in late August for the grade one. So you keep trying these two turns, but you don't have to now. I just see him as sort of a standout on here. Looks like the main speed, not sure how fast Baron is on the outside, but and I guess if somehow Drain the Clock did not show up tomorrow, then I guess Whiskey Double would be the other one.
You know, the horse of Butch Reed's, that Baron, really not far off.
No,
Drain the Clock.
Look, his last two races have been solid. Yeah, look, his last three have been pretty solid.
Yeah.
So I guess I can't, I shouldn't automatically dismiss him, but I just think I've been a bit more impressed from what I've seen of Drain the Clock than necessarily what I guess I haven't really seen from Baron. But look, he's earned the right. Baron certainly earned the right to be here, to be in the spot. And, you know, he's probably the third most likely winner in here.
The intrigue is that if IRAD doesn't seize the lead, and obviously Drain the Clock, if they want the lead, it's theirs. But Manny Franco, as this horse has got a gear, you know, that maiden breaker went the half in 21-4 and 45 flat. And so he's got his options. He could press. And if IRAD doesn't want to continue, he then will take the lead. There's an ounce of intrigue in here to me. So let's shift it from the 3-year-olds to the olders, and we'll go the same 7/8 in the Carter. And Andy Serling's favorite race, the Andy Serling Carter handicap, Mischievous Alex comes up from Florida as the 800-pound gorilla.
Yes, you know, I know it's only a 5-horse field, and it got a lot of, denigration on Twitter because it was a 5-horse field, but it's not a bad 5-horse field, I don't think. I think there's some, Mischievous Alex has been very good against, I think he's gotten a couple of really good setups since coming back off the layoff for the, the allowance race. He got a good pace and set fourth and then finished up real well, and then, he beat kind of horses in the Gulfstream Sprint. I mean, across the race is okay. I tell you, a horse that seems to always get short shrifted, and I'm gonna try and ride the bandwagon one time here, is Mind Control.
Mm-hmm.
How many great two-time Grade One winners at Saratoga would still be racing at age 5? And isn't age 5 the time when they're supposed to sort of really become a man and blossom? And
and
a lot of times these horses don't get that opportunity. And I think him being given the opportunity is great. And we get to see a 6-time stakes winning horse. 4 of those stakes winnings, by the way, coming at Aqueduct, show himself at 5. And they wintered in Florida. You know, I'm not going to hold the Mr. Prospector against him. I mean, here was the deal with that. He was entered in New York on December 5th, scratched out of the Cigar Mile, because of the sloppy track, which he just doesn't run over. And then had to get on a van and van down to Florida, snuck in one work, and then, you know, had to run in the race from post 12, and he ran 30. And it was at the end of an 8-race campaign. Not that many horses had, not many stakes level horses had 8-race campaigns in 2020. And, you know, needed a little bit of a break and got it. And he's come back and he's trained, from all accounts, very well down in Florida. I saw him on the track yesterday, galloping, well, jogging, I should say, because it was a wet track and it was his first day here. But, he looks, I'm gonna try and ride one, at least one race with this horse, and think that being on his favorite surface, fresh, you know, I'm not loving the rail, but, I think he'll run out of there and then run up stalking Chateau. And if Chateau's developed into the monster that he seemed to be, he could be tough to beat. But, Mind Control's solid in here. Mischievous Alex is solid in here. And, look, Super Stonehenge just ran second to Zenden, who won that race in Dubai. Unfortunately, he suffered that injury. But and then Shoplifted has been second in a couple of, second or third in a couple of graded stakes. So it's not – these horses all have license on their best to be, fixture in here. But I'm going to go with Mind Control.
I don't blame you at all. And from a betting standpoint, he's going to be at least the third choice. And I like the concept. Alvarado won the Tom Fool with him. If you go back to last March, he can win off the layoff. He has. In fact, he won the Toboggan off of a layoff going back to last year, to those, those back-to-back wins. I don't disagree at all. And I'm glad you went straight toward him. As we march toward the thick part of the card too, Dave, I don't know if you looked at all at the horses or as part of the stories in the advances, if any of these imports came up. But I will point out there's a filly and mare, seventh race, mile and a 16th turf allowance tomorrow, that features Graham Motion, Chad Brown, and Chris Clement with three individual first-time North Americas. And these invariably, at this time of the year, end up being worth following, considering the connections involved. Peter Brandt with Flighty Lady, a Sir Percy four-year-old, Lady Sansa for Bridalwood, and Clement. This is a Lope de Vega four-year-old. And Graham has got an Andrew Stone homebred, Kane Nicoel, a Medaglia d'Oro, five-year-old mare. So I just wanted people to be aware that there might be some stakes percolating going on here.
Yeah, I've heard some good things with Flighty Lady, and obviously she was running against Magic Attitude, who I believe came here and won a couple of races last year for Delacorte. So, Flighty Lady would be favored, but I think the other two look like starting points for these horses to get out further in distance. And it is an interesting race. And if it was like on another day where there weren't five stakes races, I probably would have delved into it a little bit more. But you make a good point on, we got some imports coming in, and hopefully if we can get good weather, which it looks like next week will be, we'll be able to get good use of the turf, and maybe we'll see more of these types of horses.
Yeah, keep tabs on this. And it does start the pick five, so pick five players have to be made aware of it. Now let's talk about the stakes pick three the Excelsior Gazelle and the feature, the Wood Memorial. And, the Excelsior, brought together a lot of just interesting horses, starting, of course, with Mr. Buff, who has now amassed $1.3 million. The seven-year-old gelding who just does whatever John Kimmel asks him to do.
Amazing how, he shows up in all these races, and he pretty much, fires every time except when there's a numeral before the race. He might be the smartest horse ever, because he must be able to read, because there's graded stakes that he just, he just never shows up. And if he doesn't show up tomorrow and run competitive, then he just never will, because it's at a mile and eighth at Aqueduct. He's 7-for-8 with a second, going 1 mile and 1/8 at Aqueduct. He's won 3 Jazzles and 2 Alex Robs, and he could control the pace if he wants to, but he's not necessarily has to be there. So if like a horse like Backside of the Moon or Grump's Little Tots, or if they try something new with High Cal to wake him up and want to go, he can actually, I'm not saying he's going to come from way off it, but he can sit off another horse and be successful. It doesn't look like a super imposing field. I'm a little bit interested in modernist. I thought his race in the Challenger, you know, I don't know how if he was handling the track that great. He kind of was like kind of just needed to be nudged on a bit by Alvarado. And then late in the race, he kind of showed a little bit of interest and was trying to run at Last Judgment, who's a nice little horse, just got beat the other day at Gulfstream. Maybe second off a layoff. He is coming back to a track that he didn't run well at in the past. You know, that also that was coming off a long layoff in the Challenger. So I'm a bit interested in modernist. Does Limonite give you another top effort like he's done since Amira Shikakli claimed him for $40,000? I guess if he does, he'll be tough. And I guess he would be on any ticket. I would, you know, multiple race wager tickets. I think it comes down to modernist, Limonite, and Mr. Buff for me. Anybody else, I think, would be a bit of a shame. I don't know what they keep doing with Tintoretto. I'm not sure if he gets a little stipend for filling some of these races. To me, the horse, I don't even know if he's a turf horse, but he's certainly not a dirt horse.
Backside of the Moon, back with Claceris, and certainly has run the kinds of races that could compete here. Heichel from the rail, stretching back out.
I mean, Heichel just hasn't shown anything since, he's been, since really last, the 2019. I'm not sure why he's going to turn around.
He's done all his best running. You see that? He's done all of his best running at Aqueduct. He's 3-2-1. At Aqueduct,
yes.
He's 3-0-0-0 anywhere else.
That is true. And that was several years ago. And he did beat Mind Control in the Gotham in 2019, which is Mind Control's only loss at Aqueduct. So maybe the Aqueduct, maybe he'll see Aqueduct and we'll perk up. I don't know. A lot of us do. A lot of us don't.
why you gotta be like that?
It's been a long 6 months.
Let's go to the Gazelle. Speaking of perking up, at some point the 3-year-old filly scene has got to perk up, and tomorrow's a candidate with four preps, and obviously Chad has got a nice hand coming in here. Search Results, the Klarovich Flatter, is 2-for-2, debuted nicely in January, then came back in the Busher. And the Grass is Blue, who's kind of a fun. I happened to have been with Louis Lazanero the day that he happened to watch a race at Monmouth and see this horse. He was tuning in for something else, and he ended up seeing this horse break the maiden for 25, and he reached out to John Stevens . It was like a Victor Kiam. The horse looked so good, I bought him.
That story. I think I relayed that story after she won the Busanda. He kind of indicated that he was at the restaurant and said that he was watching a race. He saw a horse break bad, and the next thing, he's doing something, shuffling, wine glasses around or something. And then he looks up and he says, he sees the horse in the stretch. He goes, "Isn't that the horse that broke bad?" I think Steve Young was there as well. And he says, "Isn't that the horse that broke bad?" And he goes, "Yeah, it is." A couple phone calls later, the horse was transferred. I look at this race, Steve, as if it's not Search Results, then it could be anybody, because it's hard to make a strong case. Search Results would be favored, even money or less. And if she can handle the mile and eight, she'll probably win. But if she doesn't, then it's almost anybody else's race. I don't know if the Grass is Blue is fast enough. Then you've got a horse like Always Late, Mia Martina, and Song of Innocence, who are trying dirt for the first time. I think Army Wife's a little interesting. Obviously, Thyra Will for the same connection didn't make the transition from turf to dirt. Army Wife seems to have made the transition from turf to dirt, but again, is she fast enough? But she did, she's 2-for-3 with a second to a horse that did come back and win a stake at Remington and then has run fourth twice this year. To me, I think that maybe the most interesting horse is Maracuja for Rob Atras. The last race was solid. And she's by honor code. I mean, Rob's comment to me was she wanted nothing to do with sprinting, and she won nicely sprinting last out. And now she's got a nice bottom under her, and now stretches out to mile and eighth. And if he's right that she wants the distance, she's got to get faster. But if she does perk up going this far or step up going this far, you know, she's listed as 15-1 in the morning line. I got to take a little bit of a shot with that. Obviously, the barn is going great guns, went great guns all winter. And now stretching out a horse that was sold for good money and has a pedigree that says she should go long. And that one interests me a bit, especially at that price, Maracool.
Another horse that took a step forward stretching out was Hybrid Eclipse for Linda on the rail. Mm-hmm. And going the mile and a 16th at Laurel, first time two turns, and she won like a champ. Another step forward. I mean, she's another one that you know, is a cut beneath search results, you know, from most of the performance measurements. But, you know, another 16th of a mile, who knows? She's a painter out of a valid wager mare and really feels like she's got another forward move in her, too. So there is some intrigue. Like you say, if it's not going to be search results, could be anybody. Well, let's get to the wood. And I'll let you know, kind of tee off on what is a very interesting collection of horses. You know, Dave, I you got the two Chads, obviously, and you got the Gotham winner. And then you've been, you know, you've sort of had horses trickling in from, you know, different points on the compass. The prevalence inclusion obviously added a lot of intrigue. Brooklyn Strong didn't look like he was going to get, you know, involved on the Derby chase. Candyman Rocket looked like he, you know, blew a tire at Tampa. And then the two Todd Pletchers. I had Todd the other day. He actually, if you listen carefully, He was, you know, kind of chirping about Dynamic One. This is fun. And then you got Penny Pierce shows up from Philly with a candidate.
Yeah, how funny it would be if Market Maven won this race and the horse is not even nominated the Triple Crown. They just let 6,000, you know, they had an opportunity to nominate Monday for 6,000. And now if she won this race, or he won this race, which I would find most distressing, you know, they would have to pay like $150,000 to run the Kentucky Derby. So if Market Maven wins, then the wood becomes even less of a Kentucky Derby prep than it's been since 2003. Prevalence is the one that's very interesting. How good is Prevalence? And, you know, is this the right time for Prevalence? He's been on a bit of it might be harsh to say rush schedule, but it's a compact schedule, I guess we should say. But his maiden win, obviously everyone, you know, food and odd over that race. He was eyeballing the Fountain of Youth. He didn't go because he got sick, then came back with a decent allowance win. And now that set him up for this. Probably would have went to the Bluegrass if Godolphin didn't have essential quality. But this has been very, you know, like as you said, and I wrote last week, because he adds a lot of intrigue and interest to this race now. And, you know, he's probably going to be very close to the pace, if not the pace. And we'll see how good he is and how far he goes. And that last work the other day, I watched that on XBTV, and, you know, they weren't really looking for 47-3. And if you just watch him go, it didn't look like he was going 47-3. And he just kind of left his workmate with ease. And it was a very impressive, it was an eye-catching work to me, and he galloped out very well. So I'm kind of excited to see what this horse is and what he can do. Risk-taking, you know, he's obviously come alive and going long in two races at Aqueduct. And, was, you know, I thought the competition leaves a little bit to be desired, but, you know, it's not like this is, he's not facing any grade one winners here. I just haven't been, and maybe it's just the track, I just haven't been overly enamored with his last two works I've seen. I'm not saying he's going the wrong way. I'm just saying, knowing how Chad's horses work, they've just been a little bit of a notch below that for me. And, you know, maybe it's just him. Maybe it's the company that he's been working with. And, you know, Chad kept a lot of horses up here, but maybe he didn't keep up something that can really work well with risk-taking. But I there's just something about the way his last two works that leaves me a little bit, you know, maybe looking elsewhere. Now, he just may be better than these horses or better than them at a mile and eighth at Aqueduct, but I just need to go a little bit further than risk taking in there, and obviously Prevalence will be on there. Yeah, you know, Candyman Rocket intrigues me from the standpoint of, if you remember, Mott had some horses that really stunk up the joint at Tampa at times. Boldient, I think, was one, and Royal Delta, I think, went then terrible in like
the Suncoast.
And Emollient ran bad in the race to Tampa, and then came back a week later, I think, won the Gulfstream Oak. So, you know, Tampa's a little bit like Vegas. What happens at Tampa stays at Tampa. You know, obviously he's got a good race and a bad race there. I'm intrigued a little bit by him. Something happened. He was right there, and then he wasn't, and they said something. Maybe he held his breath, or there might have been something that happened in the gate that kind of unsettled him a little bit. And I don't know. I just the way Mott's been going this winter, I have to include him. I'm not there with I'm not there with either of Todd's horses, but I mean, if you know, it's hard. I guess the intrigue about Dynamic One is that he's bred by the Phipps, and he's owned by the Phipps for Poli and St. Elias, and it's kind of and he sold for a lot of money. But I guess maybe I'll have to go back and look at a couple of races, but I noticed that our handicapper, Mike Deere, picked him, I guess, looking for a different type of horse. It's a big ask from my standpoint, but we'll see. And then Brooklyn Strong. I mean, you talk to Danny Velasquez, you'll be going to the ATM and taking out the money and wanting to bet him. This is talk about a big ask. It's a 119 day layoff. With illness and interrupted training in between. If he pulls this off, boy, I know the media will have fun with Danny at the Derby if he makes it that far. A lot to ask. The Gotham horses, you know, crowded trade did do the 3/4 to the mile very well. Does he want to go a mile? You know, he ran well enough, but a little bit green in the stretch there. I thought maybe he kind of waited. And then with Weyburn, you know, changed leads late and kind of came on and you know, got the nod. I don't know how that translates to this race. I don't know. I think these are potentially good horses that probably are going to, you know, show themselves maybe better later on in the year.
So give us your top three.
I guess I'll go Prevalence, just taking Candyman Rocket. You know, maybe try to get Candyman Rocket in the number somehow. Maybe I'll, you know, if I can get him to wake up and run back to the first Tampa race, I think it puts him in the mix at a price.
Weyburn? Did you even touch on Weyburn?
I'm dismissing Weyburn. I'm a little bit against Weyburn. You know, that first race off the layoff, he runs that big a number. I mean, where's he going from there? I'm going to say that maybe he goes backwards and backwards before he goes forward. I'm going to say he goes backwards before he goes forward.
Well, it's a big Wood Memorial Day, and I think weather-wise we're in good shape, right? The clear in 50s.
Yeah, we should be in good shape. The track should might be a little moisture in it over there today still, but it should be, you know, we should be in good shape tomorrow, low 50s. And I would plan, if you're really following New York racing, I'd plan for dinner right around 6-ish, right after the, or right around 5:15, because for some reason they've adjusted post times to the point where the earlier post times where the Gazelle will go off around 5:08. And then you have about 50 minutes before the Wood. So if you're really just focusing on New York, you know, and watching the other races on TV, you know, order the Grubhub right around 5:15. You won't be missing much in New York, and you can catch the Keeneland and Santa Anita races and still eat dinner, maybe even have a drink and dessert before the Wood goes off. 50 minutes between races is never fun. But I guess without anybody at the track, I guess it's not, you know, and with plenty else to watch, I guess it's okay.
I saw that you advised that, and I assume it's television related with NBC having their 90-minute show, and so it has to you know, shoehorn everything in.
Then I would have started at 1:40. They like to I would have started. Why start at 12:50 and have 50 minutes between races? Just go back to 1:20.
You bring up a great point.
What am I missing? We're starting earlier. We're ending at the same time, but we're squeezing in 50 races, 50 minutes in between races. Just start a half hour later.
Joe Longo?
Sorry.
this is a question that only Joe can answer.
Doesn't make any sense to me. But
Well, then, of course.
I'm low man on every totem pole, which is perfectly fine.
Dave, not on ours, and I appreciate it. And we look forward to some questions being answered. And that goes from the three-year-old division through the sprinters, through the three-year-old fillies, everything. Almost every division, and the turf is going to start to wade in, and we're starting to get starting to be able to look ahead toward Belmont and that portion of the spring equation. So thanks so much for a great winter.
All right, man. Good to talk to you.
Dave Grenig, everybody. DRF Grenig. And the action from South Ozone Park. We'll stay right here because James Scully is standing by, and we'll get some plays from James. James, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
Couple of things. Let's first recap quickly your Kentucky Derby report from last week. I have not been over to the blog to see what your takeaways. You've been doing those fun five takeaway type pieces.
Yeah, I've been doing those takeaways from the race for KentuckyDerby.com and then writing my weekly Derby report for BrisNet. And just, yeah, I'll start with Known Agenda. You know, he really stepped forward, had to win that race, had to run first or second in the Florida Derby to earn a spot into Kentucky Derby field. He only had like 2 points, and he ran a big race. You know, he drifted out a little bit in the stretch, but was still like sort of, you know, he was still drawing off. I thought that, you know, and Todd Pletcher talked about it afterwards. You know, in the Sam F. Davis, where he opened the race, you know, even in the Remsen last year on a sloppy track, he perhaps got bumped around a little bit early, but he was way off the pace and never really made much of an impact running third. Obviously, in the Sam F. Davis, he came back. He had been training well. He got bet down to 3-2 favoritism, and he's 11th in the early stages. And he's just not going to win the Kentucky Derby from the very far back of the pack. In his last two races, Pletcher added blinkers for allowance race. Those blinkers obviously, I think, helped him to sit a little bit closer in that race. Of course, that race didn't have a lot of pace, but the Florida Derby did have pace. He got a good spot, like in mid-pack. And, you know, that's really where he's going to need to be in the Kentucky Derby if he's going to be a factor, I think, is, you know, like somewhere from like 7th to 12th at worst. He doesn't want to be in the very far back of the pack. He's a horse that's moving forward. Obviously, there's some questions about how good the South Florida horses are, but he has, you know, he definitely has something going for him in terms of the distance. Really a stout pedigree on the dam side. He's by Kerwin, and he's run 4 times at a mile and 1/8 already, multiple 3-time winner at the distance. So, you know, unlike some Pletcher horses, I think in the past that have run in the Kentucky Derby, they like to race forward and have had some concerns getting 10 furlongs on the first Saturday of May. The distance isn't going to be an issue for Known Agenda. It's just going to be a matter of he's good enough.
Excellent.
And I thought Stupid Sandwich ran well to be second. Obviously, he was on the wrong lead all the way down the stretch. I thought he hung in there pretty gamely. He's a nice horse. It's just like, I just think, though, with only 3 races under his belt, it's going to be too much in the Kentucky Derby for him to really, like, hang around on the front end and be a serious factor in the outcome. But I still think he's a nice horse moving forward for Mark Cassie. And obviously, Greatest Honor has been well talked about. You know, he didn't run well on the Fountain Youth inside horses in traffic. Jose Ortiz put him right on the rail from the start, saved ground all the way. And he just really just offered a mile bid, didn't show much. Everybody anticipates him taking, like, an overland route in the Kentucky Derby. You know, he's going to have to move forward significantly to challenge for the win, but he still has some intrigue, at least for the top three.
Yeah, the one thing I'll say about Soup and Sandwich, you know, don't conclude that's where he has to run from. He ran from there under this setting with the, you know, under the conditions, but that's a horse that's learning a lot very quickly, and he isn't a runoff type. He could very easily attend a pace comfortably too. So he is a wildest of wild card types going forward, because I think people are going to dismiss him on that basis, and he's a work in progress essentially.
Yes, and then in the Jeff Ruby Stakes, like the King, he continued to advance, progress for Wesley Ward. Well, he's a horse that broke his maiden on the turf last year. Wasn't really a factor in a couple of dirt starts. You know, well beaten in both races, and he's just come on this winter on the Capetta track at Turfway, winning an allowance, running second in the Battaglia Memorial, and then really offering a strong finish to win by a length. You know, he's a nice horse. I don't think he'll be good enough to challenge in the Kentucky Derby. I will say, Sainthood, who ran second for Pletcher off of that maiden win at Fairgrounds, I did like his effort. He got point blank stopped in the stretch. When he got stopped, he sort of went sideways. He had so much momentum, and then the jock got him back on track, and he came flying late. You know, he hasn't run fast enough, it would seem, to, like, you know, factor in a grade one on dirt. But he's a horse that, to me, you know, he's a promising 3-year-old moving forward for Todd Pletcher.
Excellent. All right, James, let's dig in. We got, I'm sure, a handful of opportunities to survey. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'll start it at Keeneland on Saturday. Obviously, the big race is the Bluegrass Stakes. It's just like when you take a look at the race on paper the first time, just the lack of pace in the field, it's really sort of startling. You know, you look at Essential Quality breaking for post four with Luis Salles. You have to expect him to be forward. I think he's going to employ stocky tactics in the Kentucky Derby, and he might not be on the lead tomorrow in the Bluegrass, but he's going to be up close. I just think he'll just fall into that trip because he has shown some tactical foot in the past. I look at a lot of these dead closers, and I really don't have any interest in them. I'm going to look for a couple horses to run well, stepping up in class in a sense, and maybe not challenge for the win, but perhaps get a piece underneath Essential Quality. And I'll start with number two, Untreated. I really liked his maiden win. You guys had talked about it before. He ran on that Tampa Bay undercard about how, you know, he sold as part of that dispersal and then had some kind of like vet issues or something. So sold for only $300,000, but he trained lights out according to reports for that Tampa race, and I thought really looked good that day. Could get a good trip with Joel Rosario, perhaps hit the board. Another horse I'll mention is Hush of a Storm. He did win the Battaglia. He's a horse that obviously got to, you know, prove itself in dirt form. But I do like the fact that he's been able to stay, like, you know, sit a good trip just off the speed in his races. He has a 5-furlong bullet work in preparation for Bill Morey, who's having a good year. And I wouldn't be surprised if Hush of a Storm, who's 15-1 on the morning line, hits the board in the Bluegrass, Steve.
Very good. So four with a little 2-7. And I don't disagree at all about Untreated. And I thought Hidden Stash is going to be on my plays, too. Nice. All right. Go wherever you want.
All right. Yeah, I'll move backwards a little bit, hit a couple races on the Keeneland undercard. And race number 9 is the Ashland Stakes. And this is going to be a big race for me because I'm going to take a stand in here against Malathot. You know, if she wins the race, I'll tip my hat to her. But I thought she really, you know, had two nice wins last year going one turn distances. You know, at least nice visually. They weren't really fast, but she looked good doing it. And then in that Demoiselle, I just wasn't like, you know, she had to gut out that win that day. The best thing she really has going for her, in a sense, is that she hasn't run since early December and hasn't been exposed in this 3-year-old filly division. And at short odds, I mean, I expect her to be the big-time favorite. I'm going to try to beat her. I'm going to use two horses on my multi-race tickets from the Ashland. I'm going to use number 6, Will Secret, who I like the way she's going right now, for Dallas Stewart. I think she could get a decent setup as well if she could stay close and be in position by the top of the stretch. And the other one I'll use is Simply Ravishing. Now, obviously, Simply Ravishing, to me, the whole key to her is going to be the start in the Ashland. She broke so well in that Alcibiades last fall and just smoked a decent field wire to wire on the lead that day. She broke poorly from the rail in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies, and she just sort of walked out of the gate, I thought, in the Goldenrod. And, you know, to me, you know, she's in the same boat as Malathot, where she hasn't raced this year. She's coming back off the bench, but she is proven at two turns, you know, at Keeneland, and she's a front-running type. So I expect Simply Ravishing. If she breaks, I like her to lead wire to wire, and if she doesn't run her race, I'm going to go with Wolf Secret in the Ashland, Steve.
All right.
And then I will mention one other race there on the undercard that I'm real keen on. It's race number 7. It's the Commonwealth Stakes. There's a fair amount of pace in here. There's a several horses, Flagstaff, Hidden Scroll, Special Reserve, and, you know, that could be up there mixing it up on the front end. I really like the jockey switch on number 5 from Jose Ortiz to Luis Saez, because I was on attachment rate last time. I cast on him that day, and I just thought that was the most ridiculous trip I've ever seen. The horse doesn't have to be last early. He doesn't have to go like 8 wide off the turn. I'd like to see Luis Saez stay a little bit closer to the pace this time, because I think he's really going to come on as a 4-year-old for Dale Roman. This is kind of spot where I'll get to find out whether I'm right or wrong in, because, you know, he's not going to be the favorite or one of the favorites in here. And I'm going to bet attachment rate to win the Commonwealth Stakes tomorrow, Steve.
Hey, yesterday when I was going over with Marty, because this is a curiosity, this group, Marty kind of bounced around. He actually, I think he landed on Special Reserve, actually, at a nice number, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, he did. And I brought up attachment rate that had kind of an appealing look in here and a square enough, you know, square enough price. So,
He's a horse that really has run some big races at a one-turn mile. I think these one-turn middle 7 furlongs, one-turn mile are his ideal fit. He's a 4-year-old last year. He got caught up a little bit in chasing the Kentucky Derby. But I do think he's eligible to really move forward and be a big factor in races like this year for Dale Roman.
Very good. That's the Commonwealth. Keeneland, what else? Obviously, 3-year-olds.
I'll go to Aqueduct. I'll just give the Wood Memorial. That's a race where, you know, Prevalence to me is a talented colt, and he's another one that if he wins this race, I'll salute him and say a lot of good things. But I'm going to bet against him in that race. It's his first time going 2 turns. I don't think he's going to be able to dictate the tempo, and he just might be a horse that's in need of like some racing experience at a mile and an eighth against stakes rivals. So, there's 2 horses I want to use in my multi-race tickets from the Wood Memorial, Steve. It's number 4, Risk Taking, who I do think can get a good setup, and I do think he's essentially the horse to beat in my mind. But the horse I'm going to pick on top at a price, and I do think the Wood Memorial has the best shot of an upset between the Bluegrass, San Anita Derby, and the 3 Derby preps tomorrow. I like number 7, Candyman Rocket. And I know Dave Gurnick talked about him a little bit before I came on the air. But to me, Candyman Rocket's a horse that in his debut, he didn't break. He was behind horses. He didn't run a step that day. When he ran his second time out in early January at Gulfstream, the jockey got him outside. He had that outside trip, and he really ran a big race that day. I thought it was the same thing in the Sam F. Davis. He broke from post 9 that day. Junior Alvarado had him outside horses the entire way. And I just think that post 3 compromised him. I think post 3 and getting away about a half step slow in the Tampa Bay Derby, you know, he was all caught up in traffic. He did rush forward, but he pretty much just spit the bit readily that day. I'm expecting a completely different trip. I do like the fact that he appears to be training forwardly for Bill Mott. I don't know if like 10 furlongs would be a good distance for Candyman Rocket, but I expect him to get a mile and an eighth tomorrow. And I expect him to be, like I said, sitting just off the speed. He'll get first run on closers. And, he's offers plenty of appeal to me at 12-1 on the morning line, Candyman Rocket.
Yeah, and he's going to be a good price, and you know that Mott and his team are trying to figure out how to get Frank Fletcher to the Derby. It would mean a lot to him. Nice. All right.
And then the other race that, the Gazelle, it's an Oaks prep. I did take a look at it. Obviously, Search Result is the horse to beat in there. But I will mention that Hybrid Eclipse. You had just mentioned her as well. I do think it's interesting that this filly, I thought, ran a good race at 7 furlongs last November, came back on the turf, on the synthetic track at Turfway at 6 furlongs. I've drawn a line through that effort. She has steadily improved in those last 2 races as she stretches out a distance. You mentioned she's by Painter. You know, her dam only ran 2 times, but her second dam, Lake Okeechobee, was a multiple winner at 9 furlongs. She produced Seminole Native, who was, you know, a non-furlong stakes horse. There's a bunch of stamina in this female family is what I'm saying, because when I see Valid Wager, I don't necessarily see two turns or, you know, longer distances. But Hybrid Eclipse looks like she's built for longer distances. And the one thing she has going for her in the Gazelle is that just no early pace in this race. A couple of these other fillies could just be forward by default, but I think if Jose Ortiz hustles her a little bit from the gate, she's got a chance to get a good trip on the front end at the lone speed, and she's got the best upset chance, in my mind, by far, over the logical favorite search results.
What about California?
California in the Santa Anita Derby, I'm going with Dreamshake. I think he's, you know, I thought he was in position last time in that San Felipe. He came up empty, obviously, in the final 16th of a mile, but that was still a big step up for him, coming back off of like a, you know, 4 week rest. And he's trained forwardly, it looks like, in the interim for Peter Erden. I think he's going to get a good trip, you know, just off the speed with Flavian Pratt. And I look for him to take a step forward and run a big race in there. I will mention that, you know, I look at a horse like Rock Your World as being a little bit of a wild card in there, going from turf to dirt. Don't know what his odds are going to be in there, but that's a horse that I would be like perhaps looking to include in multi-race exotics, because, you know, he's bred to handle the main track. And I did think his two turf wins were pretty sharp, Steve.
Yeah, he's got to translate to dirt, and he's actually got to step forward a fair amount. He was priced very aggressively by John White as third choice, 4-1. We'll see what Jay Pribman thinks when he joins us next. How about the last second Friday push, the big LSFP?
I've got it. It's in race number five today at Keeneland. You know, I mentioned Bill Morey earlier. I like playing his horses at a price. He's got number four, La La Land, going back to turf. After a couple good tightener races on the at Turfway Park, 10-1, number four, race five, La La Land.
She's my second choice and my value play too. And I did watch it again. It's one of my favorite recent films, and was on again the other night and watched it for about the 35th time. And basketball, finally. Who do you like Saturday night?
You know, I'm going to take Gonzaga. Gonzaga's going to win the national title, but I'm playing UCLA plus the points against them. I think that UCLA team is going to give them a little bit of a good game. They're grabbing like 14 points. So I'm going to bet the Bruins, and I just think it's going to be Baylor and Gonzaga, and it's going to be a good one. If the Baylor's only chance to win is to slow down that Timme, because he has just dominated the competition for Gonzaga so far. Everybody thought Suggs was their best player. He is their best player going forward, but Timme has been their star of the tournament. So the Zags probably cut it down, Steve.
All right. That's right. With the championship Monday night, we won't talk until afterward, but we'll talk next week, and that ahead of Arkansas Derby. And James Scully, best of luck this weekend. I appreciate it.
All righty. Thank you, Steve. Appreciate it.
James underscore Scully 111 on your Twitter. Not that he tweets a lot. At the Twin Spires blog roll, however, he writes a lot. So you plenty of opportunity there for James. Let's take the top of the hour break. We're only 3 minutes late. That's for us, that's a big win. Come back. Jay Pribman joins us. We'll talk to Hammer this hour, as well as Ed DeRosa. Hour two, weekend preview at the races, brought to you by Twin Spires. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6000. 6880.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Sirius XM Sports presents